Hi, I'm Ryan Lim, your host to the QED Changemaker Series podcast. Here, we have conversations with senior executives and business leaders about their visions, ambitions, and concerns for the largest and most challenging issues facing our industry today. For each episode, we'll be discussing different topics with these thought leaders, decision makers, and most importantly, change makers. Combined, these are the captains of our industry who will be shaping our future. This podcast is for QED Changemaker Series on 29th May 2020. We'll be focusing on how organizations are dealing with the new norm resulting from COVID-19. Our guest in this episode has served Singapore for many years in his public service career. Prior to his current appointment, he was Permanent Secretary of the Ministry of Communications and Information and Chief Executive Officer of the Infocom Media Development Authority. He was also the Principal Private Secretary to Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong and served in the Ministry of Defence, Ministry of Health and the Public Service Division. He currently also serves on several boards of directors. Now with the Ministry of Trade and Industry, he formulates policies to grow Singapore's economy, strengthen its enterprises, and create better jobs for Singaporeans. We have Permanent Secretary of Ministry of Trade and Industry, Gabriel Lim. Hi, Gabriel. A very warm welcome to our first podcast season of QED Changemaker Series.
Yeah, hi, Ryan. Good to see you.
Thank you so much for spending time with us and really appreciate it. So let's get started. Now, the most important thing that we want to start with is first and foremost the 20,000 feet view of the industry and business landscape, since everyone is talking about the new norm. Most are concerned about now and beyond COVID-19. So my first question, therefore, is that how has the business world changed from your vantage point as a result of the pandemic?
Well, I mean, I think it's been quite a seismic shock. Businesses have always been advised to prepare their business continuity plans. But it's really, frankly, quite difficult to prepare for disruption of the scale that we've seen with COVID, where you don't just have supply disruptions, but also a really quite a synchronized collapse in global demand. I think that obviously in the immediate term, many businesses will be concerned about liquidity, cash flow issues. And that's something that many governments are working on. They have opened up the taps. They have tried to funnel a lot of liquidity into the system. And I think certainly here in Singapore, we have done this via three budgets and many of our existing schemes continue to apply. We've really tried to help the businesses get through this in the short term and in particular, make sure that their workers are retained. But more importantly, I think that it will be businesses and the entire industry must obviously keep an eye out for the longer term. There will be major shifts that are going to take place. I think there are certain themes that are emerging, which even though still some ways to go to evolve, but nevertheless, I think businesses particularly focusing on digitalization, focusing on resilience, having to adapt to a reconfiguration of their supply chains, particularly a shortening of that, I think those that can adapt better to those fundamental shifts in the trends will do better. I think other businesses will have to try to adapt and will have to really try to use this to sort of position themselves more favorably for the long term. The fact of the matter is that I think we will have to live with COVID for a reasonable amount of time. Obviously, if a vaccine is out earlier than later, that would be great. But this has been a reminder that even if it's not COVID, even if there is a vaccine for COVID, there may well be another virus or bacteria or pandemic down the line, just as there was H1N1 10 years ago, SARS, another 7 years before that, and so on, that businesses must be prepared for. And I think that this is something that all CEOs really and boardrooms ought to be thinking about quite actively.
That means the risk of the pandemics are very real in our lifetime and beyond, right? So that's probably one of the new corporate risk areas that we have to be very concerned about.
I think that part is definitely true. And As I said, most of the BCPs that were developed, I would have imagined that many businesses, especially the MNCs, would have put in place BCPs to get through a disease outbreak of sorts. Like, again, having gone through SARS, H1N1, it would have been only the right thing to do to have some of these plans in place. But the scale and the disruption caused by COVID has been quite unprecedented. And I think it would have exceeded most of the risk simulations that most businesses would do. So I think the question right now moving forward is, how do you think about your business moving forward? How much insurance premium, in a sense, do you want to purchase for another COVID-type event? Or more importantly, how can you achieve continuity and resilience in other ways, including the way you diversify your supply chains, the way you partner other companies or other businesses in your sector and beyond, and so on and so forth. There is a very natural tendency at this point in time that because of the sheer shock of COVID, everybody, countries including, wants to do everything in-house. You want to onshore all production, you want to control your supply chains end to end. I suspect that while that might appear very logical at this point in time, I suspect when you actually do the sums and when you actually think through the cost of actually doing all of that in-house, that you will find that that may not be sustainable except to a very few companies. And what is a more sustainable approach actually would be continue to broaden, diversify our supply chains for countries to continue to work with other countries to be part of a global system, but to be more thoughtful and deliberate about minimizing concentration risk, for example, to diversify your upstream suppliers and downstream customers, for instance, so that through this greater diversification, you can continue to still carry on your business while lowering your risk. I think that's a very well-established principle in financial portfolio management, and I think the same thing will be done.
So for such things, then, that would require a lot of rethinking and reinventing of that business model, right? Moving forward in view of that new norm.
I believe so. I think just two parts to that. Whatever business you're running, I think that the points that I mentioned about diversification and resilience will be much more important. But at the same time, I think even among the businesses, depending on the business that you're in, I think there has to be some rethinking on how to operate your business. It is my view that businesses which are more able and more willing to go digital, to go online, I think will benefit. I think businesses which are more prepared to, you know, embrace technology, for example, whether or not it's for delivering of your goods, but also engaging our stakeholders and customers and everything, again, will benefit. I don't think there's any replacement for face-to-face interaction. We are humans after all, and the personal touch is absolutely important. But in the same way, we also do know that life is not going to go back to what it was pre-COVID for quite a bit of time. And in that interim period, I think it makes a lot of sense to use whatever technology tools you have at your disposal to try to maintain your business relationships and your customer engagement processes as much as possible. So I think businesses will have to think about it in two ways.
So what about those businesses which are massive, or the entire industries completely disrupted as a result? I mean, some of them are just adjustments, but some of them are completely overhauled as a result of this whole new situation that they are facing.
Yes, I understand what you mean. I mean, I think, for example, the ones that have been very, very, very severely hit have been, for example, tourism, for example, hotels, I would say lifestyle in particular. I know the situation looks very gloomy for them, but we've actually seen some interesting green shoots of innovation and creativity among some of the members of the sector. For example, you would see that in some of the countries, for example, China, they are restarting their MICE industry, their conventions industry, so to speak, but doing it in a quite different way. It's trying to be more selective about their participants, making sure that there are safety measures in place, and not running conventions the old way where you just have this massive congregation of participants from different places intermingling, and obviously an environment pre-COVID where you don't have to worry so much about the spread of diseases. So that's certainly been one way the industry has adapted, and that could well be the benchmark down the line. Likewise for tourism and attractions, again, we have seen, for example, Shanghai Disneyland opening up ticketed, time-based, with very clear capacity limits at different rides. Again, that's not impossible for countries to do and for businesses to think about. For F&B, similarly, you will have much more strict enforcement of safety distancing to limit reservation or table sizes, to have much more sanitation and disinfection done. My sense of the matter is that the businesses will adapt. Obviously, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There will be some businesses which will find it going a lot tougher, so there will be some consolidation, and there will be, in some issues, a rebalance in the overall product definition and value proposition to your customers. But I also take the other extreme view that there are some sectors which are completely gone. I think, if anything, human societies have shown that they are not just resilient, but also creative and innovative about how they can redefine themselves and rebrand themselves. And I think some new business models will emerge from this that will allow us to be more resilient and to be safe in a COVID world.
And so at this point, is there any specific call that you would like to reach out to the industry groups that they should be doing as a form of support to this whole change that's on the way?
I mean, I think the call would be really that, you know, as far as Government of Singapore is concerned and the Ministry of Trade and Industry is concerned, we are obviously want to work very closely with you to figure out how we can help to get through this very difficult time. Not just get through this in the short term, but also make sure we reposition and reorganize ourselves for, like I said, the long term, in a to a COVID world. And I think we'll be happy to work with you. We've been working very closely with the various trade associations and chambers. Companies have given us excellent feedback, which we've incorporated into the three budgets so far, the Unity, Resilience and Solidarity budgets. We have different committees being set up to look into sector-specific issues. For example, in tourism, there's been a task force that's been in place for the last 2 to 3 months. We now have an emerging, stronger task force also chaired by Minister Desmond Lee and Chong Ming from PSA, looking into some of the broader issues. So I just want to urge companies to continue to work with us and really get through this together.
So perhaps that we can then right now shift our focus to organizations like your teams and the people that are working with you and for you at the same time. What have you learned about your organization as you manage through this crisis?
Well, I mean, I've just been so encouraged and so heartened and so inspired by my colleagues, not just within the Ministry of Trade and Industry, but really across the civil service as well. I mean, I think it's commonly said that you really get a full measure of a person and true character of a person in adversity, right? And I mean, COVID has been obviously a very difficult situation, but the one shining light has really been just how my ministry, my colleagues and my colleagues within the ministry, but also in other ministries, have really rallied together. As a real sense of mission and spirit, we are very, 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 very acutely aware of the challenge. We are resolute in terms of working through this for not just the business sector, but the whole of Singapore. I think, Ryan, just before the podcast was recorded, we were talking about, you know, some of the social challenges, some of the mental challenges that were likely to emerge. And that's something we're looking at very carefully as well, to make sure that, you know, at the end of the day, when we think about doing public service and serving Singaporeans, we are thinking about their entire well-being across multiple factors, not just their health, obviously keeping them free from, safe from COVID, not just their livelihoods, you know, trying to really make sure that we keep them in the jobs and continue to earn a good living, but also their overall well-being, their mental well-being, their emotional well-being, and recognizing that even during difficult times like circuit breaker and everything, we have to make sure that people are psychologically okay. So I've been really heartened by this. I mean, it's really been a real source of strength, not just for myself, I speak for many of my colleagues as well. And I think that's great. And I think so long as we are able to harness this sense of mission, this sense of teamwork, I'm a lot more confident that we can get through this situation intact and stronger as a country and as a society.
I understand that with the internet separation with the government sectors, right? How has that transition been? Because right now everyone's working from home, and how's the adaptation like so far? I mean, the experience of actually having to move away from the office and everyone has to, you know, grapple with all these changes from a government perspective.
I mean, we've adjusted like any other worker out there who's had to telecommute. So first and foremost, just to be clear, it's internet surfing separation. In other words, we can't use our office laptops to, you know, go and surf the internet, but it is obviously connected to the internet because emails still flow. And the good thing is that I think for us in the civil service, but also broadly, I think in Singapore, we are actually quite a wired up society to begin with. So mobile working is not something that I think it's quite widespread already, even before this, like, you know, and so for many of us, technological part of it has been relatively smooth. I want to credit my colleagues in GovTech and the Smart Nation group. They have not just been making sure that our IT infrastructure is up to speed, but they've continued to enhance it and make it a lot easier. So a lot of tech solutions to enable video conferencing has been very smooth and works very well. I think the biggest adjustment really has not been on the technology part, but just adapting to the fact that you're not in a workplace where you get to bounce ideas off your teammates and off your colleagues. You don't have the same form of social interaction, and it's not just social interaction, right? But it's obviously the ability to fuse ideas, to inspire one another, to challenge one another, and out of that come out with much more robust processes. Again, you can do that on video conference, but it's just not the same. I think all of us will acknowledge that. But also the just working from home, I mean, you know, when you have kids running around because they're not in school, you have elderly parents or grandparents also staying in, and just generally also being cooped up because you're not supposed to go out except for essential chores like buying food, for example. And that's been quite an adjustment. I you know, you can work at home at night or over the weekends, or even work on a laptop when you're traveling. But when you're at home 24 hours a day for the last month and a half already, things do change.
So how are you leading your employees and your colleagues as they adapt to this new environment?
Well, I'm trying to stay connected to them. I mean, we have regular video and conference calls. But like I said, that in my view doesn't replace the real thing. I do send out sort of emails to the entire ministry from time to time. In fact, I'm going to do one because it's been about 2 weeks since I last did one. Really just to stay in touch with them. And then obviously we have our usual WhatsApp groups where we get to exchange things which are not so formal, not so serious, but it's just a way of staying connected. as you do with friends and your social circles.
So do you see these kind of investments as temporary, or do they have a much longer lasting impact that probably will define the future of work post-pandemic?
I think these changes will have a long tail. I do think that we will go back to working from the office, but at the same time, I think the balance will be different. I think working from home will become much more commonplace. I think the way people work from home will adapt so that it's much more seamless. The inconveniences will be ironed out, the technological bugs will be sorted out, and things will be easier. So I think there will be a different balance. I don't believe in extreme corner solutions. I don't think everyone will work from home, neither do I think everyone will come back to the office. It's really about where is the balance in the middle that we'll finally land on. To be fair, just for the record, I think it was already happening before COVID. It's just like COVID has accelerated this. It has forced, I would imagine, some of those who are not so keen on embracing work from home to do it because you have no choice. And some of them actually have found that actually it's not a bad thing. It's not been as difficult as they had imagined. Some of the solutions have been not bad. And I think some of them would have become permanent converts. So I think the balance will shift, and I think we just have, I mean, the world will just adjust. That's the way it is.
So you've got new advocates having to experience it firsthand and realize, hey, it's actually working, and probably you get a higher adoption rate than before, and right now more companies jumping on it as well. So probably a good view of it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and Ryan, you know this from your time in the IMDA side, but some of your strongest ambassadors and advocates of digitalization, you know, broadly, have actually been your elderly. The guys who always think about the elderly as those which are maybe most susceptible to being part of the digitally vulnerable. But there are many, many elderly, those in their 70s, 60s, 80s, who have embraced digital, who have been able to become digital ambassadors in the community, who have basically been able to convince their friends of the same age group to also come along on this very exciting journey. I will never ever paint people with the same broad brush. There are always going to be those who are more embracing of change and those who are less embracing of change. But your biggest advocates typically or can come from the group that one would imagine may be less welcoming of change, and they are your strongest advocates when you do realize how good it is.
Yeah, that's actually very encouraging to hear. So maybe I want to look forward to a slightly different future right now. And we are trying, or rather getting closer and closer towards the lifting of the circuit breaker, or even hopefully in some light in the tunnel that COVID-19 will end soon, hopefully. What will be the kind of key investment efforts as we go towards that emergence? Week one versus, say, month three, for example, in terms of efforts. From your point of view to your organization, for example, from the government side?
I think your immediate sort of the priority is making sure that when you reopen, and by the way, just to be clear, when I think about reopening, it's not just the economy and businesses. It's really about society. It's getting back to school, being able to walk out to the parks and with your family, not just alone, and so on and so forth. I think the first order of business is making sure that we can do it safely. Obviously, what we don't want is the fact that you reopen and then infection rates spike up and then you are then forced into a different position. We've seen this happen in China, in Korea, in Germany, and I think that's something we're watching carefully to try to make sure that we do our best to try to avoid the situation.
So like the wave two kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable, right? I mean, it's a function of the degree and intensity of social interaction. So we just have to watch it and try to do our best to reopen safely. But in the long term, like I mentioned, really is making these more permanent adjustments to our way of life, to our way of doing business, to our way of work in a COVID world. I'm very hesitant to use the word post-COVID because I think we have to live with COVID for the foreseeable future. And like I said, even if it's not COVID, it could well be another virus or another pandemic down the line, which will force us into a very similar posture, right? And therefore, I think it's better that we accept that, we mentally prepare ourselves for that, and we start making the lifestyle, site-to-workplace changes that are necessary for us to be resilient and to operate in that sort of a world.
So if with that in mind, then how do you think that businesses and organizations should actually manage employee safety as they reopen, for example?
The first order of business, not just again businesses, but actually any organization, because it's the same for schools and the students, it's the same for employers and their workers. It's really recognizing that individually we have a responsibility to stay clean, to be considerate. If you're sick, if you're feeling anything less than 100%, you know, don't go out, stay at home, see a doctor, go rest. When you go out, wear a mask, sanitize your hands, you know, be hygienic, don't throw stuff on the floor. And I mean, these are things which we have been talking about for a long time, but in this current environment, it's even more salient. And I think this must start with the individual. If individuals practice individual responsibility, maintaining hygiene, and so on and so forth, I think that will make a big difference to our ability to live with COVID and with this virus. But I think for employers, for the leaders, and so on, I think it's also the responsibility to either your employees or to your students or to whoever comes into your institution, you know, to make sure that you keep that place, that building, that site clean as possible. Whether or not it's, for example, making sure that they're all masked up. Whether or not your processes, you have to ensure that there's sufficient room for safe distancing, at least 1 meter apart, preferably even more. When they go into the common areas, for example, the pantries, that you don't end up congregating at the same time, stagger their break hours, stagger their lunch hours, make sure there's safe distancing in terms of the seating. You know, don't put out buffets with common utensils, do separate packed lunches or packed meals for them and so on. And these are things that I think the employers, for example, or leaders can take responsibility for. Put sanitizers, get cleaners to regularly disinfect common areas like toilets, lift landings, like lift buttons, like staircases and lobbies and things like that. So that's a shared responsibility. And I think on the government side, we have been putting out advisories. We will obviously enforce, we will put in place the right legislation to support this national fight against COVID. But at the end of the day, I think it boils down to the individuals, to leaders, to CEOs or managers to basically do what they can within their respective organizations.
So there's actually a lot of new habits forming that we need to be able to inculcate in society in general, not just in Singapore, but almost everyone that's visiting or going anywhere else around the world these days. Yeah. Finally, let's talk about something personal impact. Okay. So what are the key lessons that you've learned about yourself that will guide you post this whole pandemic?
Well, if there's ever any doubt, it's been put to rest that I am quite a worrywart. I have been concerned about the long-term impact of COVID, even when it first broke, when it wasn't even clear back in January or even early February, that the scale of the issue would be as large as it is right now. So there's a little bit of that. But I also think that one very clear thing that has emerged from this is just a much stronger affirmation of really what public service means to me. Like I said, you know, you don't really want to be confronted with a crisis, but the crisis does force you to focus your mind and does put in very sharp relief what are the key things that I stand for and what matters to me. And I think, if anything, I mean, just the importance of making sure that we are doing right by Singaporeans, we're protecting them, we are helping them, we are working together to get through this and everything. I mean, all these are the issues at work that have really been reaffirmed. As far as I'm concerned, that's something that I thought was quite an interesting takeaway.
So how have you changed personally? I mean, in terms of your leadership or management style or even vision, given the way things are right now?
Probably best to ask my colleagues rather than myself, to be honest with you. I think it's what this situation has reaffirmed in me has been a concentration, really a sharpening of focus as to the things that matter to me and things that are important to me. And like I said, public service, and helping Singaporeans, and why that is important and why that matters to me. That's why I wake up in the morning and look forward to going to work, because it's precisely the nature of public service that appeals to me. But in terms of leadership style and everything, it's been different. I mean, I've always known myself to be a much better person-to-person leader. Let me cast that the other way. I think one of my strengths has been that I enjoy interacting with people. I enjoy meeting new people. I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy learning from them. I enjoy observing them just to see what is it that I can do better as a colleague, as a teammate. It's hard to do that now because you just don't have the same sort of personal interaction as you do obviously before COVID. And it's one thing to be able to write emails out to engage, but it's qualitatively quite a different form of leadership management than if you were to stand in front of an auditorium in a town hall and talk to people and field Q&As and so on. I mean, we still do some of that over, you know, video call and whatnot. And again, this podcast is just another example, although it's more unidirectional. But nevertheless, it's different. And I think that it's probably better to ask my colleagues about my leadership style in a COVID virtual world than it is to ask me.
Oh, thank you so much, Gabriel, for sharing your valuable time and insights.
Thanks for doing this. I'm actually looking forward to learning from them.
Most of all, thank you, listeners, for tuning in to our QED Changemaker Series podcast. For more information on QED's leadership development solutions, email us at info@qed.sg. That's info@qed.sg. Do remember to subscribe to our channel and be updated on our latest episodes. I'm your host, Ryan Lim, and I look forward to having you in our next episode.